On the World Cafe today, musician and producer Joe Henry, who has been involved with some of the best of a recent group of R&B revival discs. He won a Grammy for Solomon Burke and his Don't Give Up On Me disc in 2003. He has also produced contemporary artists like Amy Mann and Susan Tedeschi. Today we're going to talk about a new Betty LaVette album he produced, plus I Believe to My Soul, a collection featuring the voices of Mavis Staples, Billy Preston, Irma Thomas, Ann Peebles, and Alan Toussaint. To begin, I asked Joe Henry if his work with Solomon Burke and that Grammy opened the door to the I Believe to My Soul project.
Yeah, David. I was doing a lot of press for that record all over the world, you know, doing many phoners with international journalists. And it seemed to me that people were so enthused about the record because everyone was kind of starved for an authentic but contemporary version of a new soul record as opposed to, you know, what R&B has become. You know, it's kind of staked out its own turf. But to make a record that's a new recording and still is authentic to, you know, where a great soul artist might find themselves today, it seemed to resonate with a lot of people. And I started thinking about how I could do more of that kind of work because it's music I care about. Getting the call for Solomon Burke's record was kind of a fluke, and I didn't really want to sit around the house waiting for another such fluke to happen. You know, I wasn't able to will Mavis Staples to just call me on her own, so I had to think up a reason that I could call her and say, hey, I got this idea, why don't we work together? And that's pretty much what I did, though it was a three-year odyssey from the time I first hatched the idea until I could develop it to the point where I could go find a home for it.
Well, talking about that Solomon Burke session, how did that come about?
Well, I got a phone call one day, and it was really out of the blue, you know. It was my publisher, and he called me and said, hey, you know, would you want to work, would you want to produce Solomon Burke? I thought it was some kind of like a personality quiz, you know, just to kind of see what you think, you know, like, would you sleep with Marilyn Monroe if you were sure your wife wouldn't find out, you know, just kind of, like reading your tea leaves. And I said, sure I would. What's the gag, you know? And he said, well, he's been signed to, Anti, and they're looking for a producer. I think they want to talk to you. So, I said, sure, I'll have a conversation. And I'd already been talking to them a little bit in a very informal way about possibly coming to that label as an artist. So it was natural to have a conversation. But I didn't really think I had a shot at the job because there were other people they were talking to who were much more likely candidates for that job than me. I was a very wild card idea. And because I didn't think I had a chance at the job, I just started spouting off about, you know, I think you have a beautiful idea. Don't lose your nerve. Go make this kind of record. And I talked about what I thought they should do. And it was interesting enough that it turned into another conversation. And the next thing I know, I'm having breakfast with Solomon at a deli out in Sherman Oaks. And I ordered steak and eggs, and he said, you're hired. Once he knew I was from the South, you know, that seemed to be a big deal to him. And the fact that you know, he was on a very strict diet at that moment that his doctor had imposed. And I forget what he was eating, but it wasn't much. And the fact that I sat down at 9 in the morning and ordered steak, he just thought that was fantastic. He said, would you like a biscuit? I said, if they have biscuits, I'll have one. And he said, you're the man.
Well, I actually thought we'd start off with something that I know you brought. You had people bring their song ideas to the sessions, but my understanding is that this is a song that kind of happened when Mavis Staples and Billy Preston got together, and it's an old Dorothy Love Coates tune called "That's Enough." How did that one come about?
Well, that's something I was trying to push on Mavis from the beginning. I just had it in my mind that she ought to sing it. I just thought it would be great, and I'm of the belief that that song is the original template for Ray Charles' hit called Yes Indeed. I'm pretty sure he just built that song, you know, after hearing Dorothy. And I mentioned it to Mavis a few times, and she loves Dorothy, of course, and she had been a big influence on her as a young girl. But she never responded to me really, you know, that, yeah, I'll do that song. It just, you know, never kind of came up in conversation. And when Billy was there, I mentioned it to him. And he was sitting at the organ, and he goes, oh, I love that song. And he just started blasting through it. And Mavis walked into the room and started singing it with him. And I just thought, okay, you know, I've just got to corral this moment. I've got to get Mavis to do this over there by her microphone, and we'll be in business. So I kind of went to Billy and said, hey, we really got to get Mavis on this. And I went to Mavis and said, hey, we really got to get Billy to do this tune. Just kind of playing both ends against the middle, and there we were.
Well, let's listen to it. This is what came out of it, and it's a rousing performance of That's Enough. Mavis Staples and Billy Preston.
There's always somebody talking about me. Really, I don't mind. They try to block and stop my progress most of the time. But the mean things they said don't make me feel bad. I can't miss a friend I never had. I got Jesus, and that's enough. Oh, yeah. When I'm sick, in trouble, when I call him, storm rides, bells roll, that's when Jesus is the confidence to my soul. You can do me, scorn me, turn your back on me. God's got his arms wrapped all around me. I got Jesus, and that's enough.
Mavis Staples and Billy Preston from I Believe to My Soul, a wonderful collection that, as our guest Joe Henry just pointed out, came about in just a week of recording. I'd like to get your comment about technology and the sound of soul music. Was there anything you did different technologically, recording wise, to get the sound, the warm sound of this record, and maybe just a little discourse on how technology affects recordings like that?
Well, I didn't work any different. I think the trick is just to get warm sounding people, and then you get a warm sounding record. It's been my kind of method of operation lately to record to 2-inch analog tape whenever I can, just because you get a natural tape compression that I sort of like and a lot of people like. And then we throw that over to Pro Tools and mix from there, or do any kind of processing we want from there. I'm not precious about any of it. I didn't go into this project thinking, you know, that I needed to work like a purist. I think whatever facilitates music coming out of a speaker sounding like a living thing is completely fair game. So I didn't work any different because of these artists. I mean, I don't think we should have. The idea was to make a new record and you use whatever tools you have. I think we worked like I always work, in a way that I think was very familiar to these artists. We get people in a room and base the recordings on the dynamic of a live performance, knowing that you can fix anything, you can change anything, you can edit things however you want. I mean, digital has opened up everything in that regard. It's so easy to manipulate the song after the fact. But I always like to start, whenever possible, from the point of view of a performance, because you can't recreate that dynamic of interaction.
Joe Henry, I know you have recorded yourself an Ann Peebles tune. Was that your kind of gateway into her world?
Very deliberately so. I mean, I was already thinking about doing this project and already thinking about Ann being involved. And then I got a call from someone I know at Starbucks one day, and they asked me if I would contribute a track to this Valentine package they were putting together. You know, said, just pick a favorite love song and do a version of it. So I picked an Ann Peebles song because I was obsessed with her at the time, and started emailing back and forth with her manager, and she agreed to sing a backing vocal on the track. So I flew to Memphis just for an evening, and we worked out in her studio for about an hour and a half, you know, out in the backyard. She lives outside of Memphis, about 20 miles. And then we were sitting at her kitchen table at about midnight drinking coffee. And I said, okay, I'm going to tell you why I've really come here. You know, this track, you know, it's great, but it was a ruse, you know. I really want to talk about this idea I have. And talking to Ann and her husband, Don Bryant, who's been her songwriting collaborator since 1970, it was my first chance to talk to somebody who would actually be involved in the project. And I wanted to know how credible it sounded to them. And they were, you know, wildly enthusiastic and really encouraging. And I left their house and I said, well, I'm going to get to work and I'll be in touch. And then maybe a year and a half later, I came back and said, okay, I found a home for this. Let's go.
Well, that was And then you got her into the studio, and the idea was each artist was supposed to bring a song in that wasn't necessarily one of theirs. Or what was your contribution to the song selection? Say with, I'm thinking of Tonight I'll Be Staying Here With You, that she does a great version of.
Well, the premise of the record, David, was just that no one was going to do anything that they'd ever done before. So for those artists who are songwriters, I asked them to bring new songs. And for those who are interpreters, you know, we would find things for them to do that they had not done before. As far as hers, of Anne doing the Bob Dylan tune, it was just it came to me in a dream, David. I just imagined her singing that song. I don't know why. I just flashed on it one day, and I sent her the song. I don't think she'd ever heard it before. At first, I don't think she heard it or didn't hear. She thought it was a nice song, but didn't really hear that it was something for her. And I think her manager, who's also her musical director, kind of got the idea. And they sat at the piano one day and kind of started playing through it. And then she decided that she loved it. She really, found a way for it to live for her and agreed to do it. I'm happy to say because I think it's beautiful.
Definitely. Let's listen to a little bit of that beauty. This is Tonight I'll Be Staying Here With You. Ann Peebles, one of her contributions to I Believe to My Soul.
Throw my ticket out the window. Throw my suitcase out there too. Throw my troubles out the door. I don't need them anymore. 'Cause tonight I'll be staying here with you. I should have left this town this morning, but it was more than I could do. Strong, I've waited all day long, 'cause tonight I'll be staying.
Tonight I'll be staying here with you, Ann Peebles. Gorgeous version of that from I Believe to My Soul, and we're having a chance to talk today with Joe Henry, who was kind of the producer and ringleader for this project. That's kind of a jumping off point. I'd love to talk with you a little bit about song selection, because just so happens that at the same time, a bounty of things that you've been working on probably for a period of time have made their way out into the CD store, including Susan Tedeschi's New Hope and Desire disc and a wonderful album for another soul singer, Betty LeVette, who has certainly been flying under the radar for a while. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the Betty LeVette album, because there are songs on here you would... I just don't think that Betty LeVette was sitting at home thinking about cutting these songs. And I'm curious about the process of song choice on this one.
Well, she's a very strong-willed artist and has a real point of view, which is, kind of the cutoff point for me. I don't want to work with anybody who doesn't really have a point of view about who they are and what they're doing. I mean, she won't sing anything that's not like something she would have written, If it doesn't come out of her mouth sounding like something that she personally would say, she won't have anything to do with it. In fact, I wrote a song for her and sent it to her, and she said, well, it sounds good for you, but I wouldn't do it. So we just kind of kept digging, and then we decided to narrow the field and kind of work within a concept, which I quite liked, of just picking songs all by women writers. When she heard something that she liked, she responded immediately. We just kind of kept sending her things until we had a bag full. They all sound like her. I don't think anything on that record, I hope not, I don't think any of it sounds like an awkward posture for her. And that's always the trick when you have a concept and you're trying to let that direct you, but you don't want the concept to take over. It would have been disastrous to hear her singing something that sounded unnatural for her. And she was very shrewd in finding and picking songs out of the stuff that we were trading back and forth that she could really own.
Hmm. I'm going to put you on the spot. Have you picked one that you think that really comes across well for you?
Well, one of my favorites, I mean, I have two that that come to mind. One of my favorites is the song by Roseanne Cash, which is called On the Surface. You know, Roseanne's version, and, you know, and I love her, and she's a friend of mine, and her version of the song is a very kind of meditative, you know, song sung with a kind of finger-picked guitar style, very folky in its nature. That was a song we cut with Betty, I think, on the second day. And it was kind of the key to the door, you know. We were trying to find, you know, the thread, you know, the real character for this record and find a way for it to not be, you know, a studious exercise, but really take on a life of its own. And that was a song that when we cut it, it you know, to my ear, it sounds kind of like an outtake from a Sly and the Family Stone record. It sounds kind of messed up in that way and just about like it's about to come off the rails. And when we did it, everybody just laughed, you know, and Betty thought, well, we can't get away with that. And I thought, well, of course we can. You know, not only that, we're going to model the whole record after that because it's kind of it's the gateway.
Helps to have the right people in the studio with her, I guess, too. So this is...
Oh, it's the whole deal. I'll just unveil it right now and say that, you know, that's the whole gig as a producer, I think. I learned it from my friend T-Bone Burnett years ago, you know, just to be a good, very smart casting director because it all happens, you know, from that point on. And you put the right people in a room and, you know, who can listen in the right way and are, you know, egoless, you know, as far as being willing to contribute to something else. And then just, you know, stand out of the way.
This is from the new Betty LeVette album called I've Got My Own Hell to Raise, and this is Roseanne Cash's On the Surface. The Surface, the Roseanne Cash tune, as done by Betty LeVette from a wonderful new album produced by our guest today, Joe Henry. We're talking about some of his recent albums that he's been become involved with. Now, if you look back at Tiny Voices, your last album, it was a number of years ago, so you've been busy producing for a while. What's the satisfaction quotient for you? Are you getting itchy to do another album on your own?
Well, I have two answers to that, David. I mean, I'm imagining making the next record for myself, and I've been writing all the time, and I thought I would do it this fall, but there's other work to be done. But the big surprise for me has been how satisfying this actually is. You know, I always imagined, first of all, I never imagined myself in this job. Someone said to me just the other day, you know, you're having a very fine career as a producer for somebody who's so reluctant about it. Mm-hmm. And I have been really lucky because I've gotten to work with really you know, terrific artists who, like I said before, have their own point of view. But I've been really surprised to find that the satisfaction level is really not any different at all. I would have thought that being on the wrong side of the glass, as it were, would disturb me and make me very restless. But if I'm facilitating, you know, work that, you know, comes out of the speaker in a way that we all find evocative and moving. You know, I don't find the satisfaction any different. I don't find it any different, you know, that it's not my voice and it's not my song.
One of the things I wanted to talk about you being an influential person, Joe, in that you know you were talking about, you were boxing, you kind of talked about it with Amy Mann, and she got into it. You have, even though we haven't seen each other in a long time, you've got me thinking more about wearing suits more often, and I've been doing it, and I feel really good about it. And
it's like being a baseball player and putting on the uniform.
Absolutely.
You know,
I've heard you expound on a really interesting theory about just as what everybody, putting everybody in the same space, kind of what people are wearing might well influence the music in some way. I mean, this could be kind of tongue-in-cheek, but I have an idea you kind of believe it in some way.
Oh, it's not tongue-in-cheek at all. I mean, I think, you know, maybe I've said this to you before, my revelation came through Miles Davis, and I started to think about how all of his records sound just like he looked at the time. I mean, you listen to Kind of Blue, and he was wearing a Brooks Brothers suit, and that's what that record sounds like. It's very understated and elegant, late-night feel. It looks just like those pictures look. And then you go listen to his record Big Fun or Jack Johnson, and they sound like the orange suede lace-up suit that he was wearing at that time, you know? It sounds just like blue bubble sunglasses. So I realized that he knew exactly what he was doing, and he showed up, you know, looking like how the record was supposed to sound, and everything just developed from there. So I always go to a session dressed like I wanted to sound. Hmm. And I find that people start doing that with me. They meet me at the table.
Joe Henry, talking about the two albums, I Believe to My Soul and the Betty Levette record called I've Got My Own Hell to Raise. If you're looking for either of those discs, look no further than our World Cafe website on your web browser at worldcafe.npr.org.